Hello again, friends. Welcome to My Back 40 and the My Back 40 podcast. I'm your host, Steve O'Shaughnessy. Hope you guys are doing all right. I'm doing okay. And I wanted to thank everybody. The last couple weeks, or a few weeks, I don't know, man, time goes so fast. Last few weeks have been really challenging for me and my family, and I really appreciate the support and the kind words. And I know we'll get through it, man, but you know, when I look back to when it went down and when the flood happened and how I was feeling, I remember putting a video out there and I was so devastated. I just remember being so devastated. Anyway, I don't want to get into it, but I want to appreciate, I just want to say, I really thank you guys for the support. That's all I want to say. So what else has been going on? You've been riding bikes, went for a good little rip last night. Man, keep your lights charged. Keep your batteries charged because the days are getting shorter. Almost like every night I notice it's getting shorter and shorter, but I was able to get out last night for a little rip and had a good time. And I don't know if you remember back, those of you who follow the podcast, I did one with Vince Hempsall. I can't remember which number it is. 4, 7, might've been number 7. And he was the guy who went on the ayahuasca journey. If you haven't listened to it, I'd encourage you to go back. It's awesome. It's a bit of a departure from the endurance cycling, endurance athletics and training and nutrition stuff that I kind of like to lean into, but it's a bit of a different one. But at the beginning of that, I was stating how, I'd run into an old ghost. And I ran into that old ghost last night, again, him and his wife, they were just married. Actually, I don't know if they were just married. I haven't seen the dude for months, but they weren't married before. And this dude was pretty anti-marriage and we ran into each other and it's not an old ghost anymore. I consider him an ally. And I really appreciated the conversation we had that night. And that was last night. I think it really helped. And I appreciate it. So I'm not sure if he's going to listen to this one, but buddy, I feel you, brother. And the struggle's real. So I love you. Anyway, I'm going to move on. But today I'm pretty excited. I'm chatting with my coach, my friend. I consider him a friend now, Ryan Draper. So we connected, a few weeks back. The dude was sitting out in a field by a lake in the mountains. And we video chatted for about an hour and we just kind of talked about his training ideology, kind of discussed a little bit about my experience, training with him. We haven't really gotten into it really hardcore yet. Cause I think he's still trying to figure me out. I think he's looking at my data and he kind of can see what I'm up to. And he knows that there's a lot of shit going on right now. So we talked the other day and it's kind of more of a intuitive training program, I guess I'm on right now. My strain's been really high just with the amount of stress and other stuff going on. So the schedule's just been random, but it's kind of the way my life has been. I don't know if he's really too sure how many hours I can commit, but I do try to get out and ride my bike 2 to 3 times a week. I really try to get out and usually they're anywhere between 30K rides on my single speed. That's what they've been lately. I've been using this term a lot, bandwidth. That's the amount of bandwidth I have available to me right now. And especially, family and we're working opposite schedules and we only have one car and it's just like, it's complex. But it's just the way my life is right now. And I feel it's pretty good. I'm really happy with that. If I can get out a couple times a week, I'm pretty pumped. If it's less than that, not so pumped. Like day a week, I don't know. I just start feeling gross and lethargic and just cloudy. And I just need to get out there and do that. But anyway, so Ryan's trying to figure that out. So in this one, we just had a great conversation. It surrounds the Whoop platform quite extensively. It's not an advertisement. It's just the approach we took. So, I mean, I think a lot of his athletes are using Whoop as a personal, as a wearable, like a tracker. And this is my first. The thing that you have to realize about it, it doesn't count steps. That's not what it's for. What it's for is heart rate variability. And you're going to hear us use that term a lot. And that's basically the distance between your heartbeats. So if you had resting, or just say resting, or just you know, chilling out heart rate of 55 beats per minute, or say let's go 60 beats per minute, you know, one beat per second, the interval between the beats changes, and that's the variability. And depending on the variability, it can tell you a lot about your physiology. So it's been a really interesting thing to have, and I've mentioned it a couple times on here. And yeah, it's very, very cool stuff. So I'm not gonna linger. I'm not gonna talk anymore. Keep this short this week because I don't have the bandwidth right now. And you guys are probably done hearing me talk anyway. But yeah, Ryan Draper, he's a consultant, a coach. You'll hear me tout their services on the podcast often. 101 VIP 20. If you want to use that coupon code to save 20% off a bike fit or a consultation, you want to reach out to Cycling 101. And this is Ryan Draper, and I'm really stoked to be bringing him to you on my podcast. And we're going to have more than one of these coming up in the future, just kind of tracking my progress as I get ready for the Tour Divide. I've also said this a number of times. I'm throwing the Tour Divide out there to the universe, but there's way too many variables right now for me to say, I'm going to see you in Banff. I can't say that right now, but that's the goal. And you know what? You got to have a goal, something to work toward. So if it does happen, I'll be ready. If it doesn't, I'm gonna be fucking fit. Right. So, you know, win-win, I guess. But, I'm going to stop now and bring you my coach and friend, Ryan Draper.
This is my view right now. Here, I'll flip you here. I'm sitting out at the lake, just taking in the old mountains, and then back behind me,
oh, wow.
You see the moon?
Yeah,
in between.
I can.
Yeah.
Wow.
So,
pretty nice spot. So, what are you in, a bivvy?
Yeah.
What are you doing?
No, I'm just sitting here. I woke up and had a coffee and had the morning, morning movement, and then it's like, okay, I'm going outside.
Wait, is that close to your house?
Yeah, this is just, I live in the Peaks of Grassy. I live right by Quarry Lake.
Yeah. So, wow, man, that looks really nice. I'm writing down that headphone recommendation.
Yeah. Beats Studio 3s. They're noise canceling. They last for 24 hours.
Oh, that's pretty
wireless.
Good.
Yeah, they're pretty snazzy.
I'd probably
you can answer your.
Sorry.
You can answer your phone if it rings when you're connected, and oh yeah, it's pretty sweet. And we use them, believe it or not. Like, we'll connect to like, you can connect two sets to like an iPad and like watch TV or a
oh, really?
Show or movie in bed. Oh yeah.
Oh yeah.
So you could have chaos going on next door, like construction going on, and you can just sit there. So we use them quite a bit. Like my wife, when I got them for her, she's like, I don't know if I'm really going to use these, and she's like absolutely in love with them.
Yeah,
so
I'd have to get buds, but
yeah,
it was more for like, you know, in the morning when I get up, and I, you know, my routine now is I'll get up, make coffee, and then just roll
yeah.
and stretch every morning. And I've got the cord plugged in, listen to a podcast or something. It's just always getting in the way, and it'd be nice to have some wireless buds to, yeah, right on, man. Well, sorry, I just woke up. So I'm a little, what time do you get up every day? What's your morning?
I'm
all over the place.
It's all over the place, but it depends on when I get to sleep. Like my big thing, like we've got dogs and they get us up at like 3:30, 4 o'clock in the morning to eat and go to the bathroom, and then they go back to bed.
Oh yeah.
So it just depends on when my first clients are. And I always try and get up like 2 hours before anything. But today I was like, you know what? I'm not getting up at 5. I'm going to get up at 6 and do my thing.
When I started the podcast, I started doing that, getting up at, okay, I'm going to get up at 5. Every day consistently, and I'm gonna go edit for an hour, you know, before the morning starts for the podcast. And I couldn't sustain it. And not until I got a wearable was I able to. It's really changed my sleep behavior a lot. Like,
yeah,
and just, I've only had it, what, not even 2 months? Well, maybe 2 months now. And I've come to realize like two things. It's like, one, I wasn't sleeping enough, and two, I was constantly overreaching with my activities. So it's super interesting. It's been an interesting, I was just thinking about that today and how getting that right amount of sleep shifts your mental state as well. Cause you're not just a grumpy asshole all the time. You know, you just wake up, even if you have a shitty recovery night, sometimes you'll wake up and it'll say your recovery is really bad, say after a high strain day. And then, but you don't feel it anecdotally. You're like, but I feel okay. Like I feel pretty good. And it was, I think that's just the sleep component of that whole calculation.
Yeah.
But, now it's more of a disciplined bedtime than, you know, I get up at pretty much get up at 6 every day, like for work.
Yeah.
On weekends, I'll turn the alarm off, but I still get the kids get up at 7. So yeah, it's, I don't know. It's been cool. So coach, what do you want to talk about?
What are you recording right now?
I am. Yeah.
Yeah. Nice. Nice. Good. I was like, man, we're going, we're digging already.
And, oh no, we don't have to. No, we don't have to.
No, this is great. This is great. I love it. I love it. I think, you know, that there's so much, right now that we could talk about. I think I want to touch on something really, really cool about your last podcast. I think this is like a really good segue, okay. A really good intro into our conversation.
And for those who don't know, that was John Stamstad, right? That's the one we're talking about. Yeah.
Yeah, that's exactly it. You know, we talk about in coaching, especially with youth, we talk about like pivotal moments, and there's always a pivotal moment for people when they decide to take something on, or they choose to, you know, go down a certain path. And, John, unbeknownst to him in, I guess it would have been 97, 98, when he was racing, a couple of solo 24-hour races in Ontario at Hardwood Hills, he unbeknownst to him, got me motivated to do some 24-hour solo racing. I watched him do a 24-hour solo race there. He had a little pup tent set up in his pit. He was eating Spam and Nibs and Pringles. he took like a 4-hour like sleep in the middle of the night. He was riding for Airborne Bikes at the time, titanium frame builder, and he was sponsored by Chevy Trucks. He had these knee pads on, and I just remember this fairly pale redhead, long, shaggy guy ripping around the course, and I was like, man, he's doing pretty well. Like he's almost keeping up with like the, you know, like the top 10, top 15, like teams out here. And, you know, I was really young then. I was like 17, 18, and I was on a 5-man team. And, what happened was on our way down to the race, we went from a 5-man team to a 4-man team. And then on, one person's first lap, they crashed. And then another guy partway in crashed as well. So there was two of us. And I was the youngest one on the team. I was kind of brought in as a young guy on a team of kind of executives that were racing there. And I ended up doing something like 8 or 9 laps in a row throughout the night. And it kind of, when I was done all of my laps, I went and I was looking in the pit row, and I could see this figure come out of this little pup tent and get back on his bike all disheveled. And I was like, man, I'm like, I just did 8 laps. I'm like, I wonder if this solo thing could be for me. And I'm like, this guy's doing it. And I'm like, maybe there's something here. And then, so I moved actually to Canmore in the spring of 99, and Canmore was hosting the very first World Solo Championships in 99, and that was my foray into 24-hour solo racing. And it was all because of the motivation I got from John, and like watching him during that race back in it was either 97 or 98, I can't quite remember, but really interesting to hear his journey that led up to that point where I kind of saw him and then gained motivation from him and kind of started my own career.
I think that's how it works. It's like you you intersect with people who either become unknowingly a mentor or a just some sort of inspiration. And you know, that goes without saying in the bikepacking world as well, right? Like you'll go to an event and you'll meet the person that will end up winning that event. And then you may, you know, be friendly with that person and leverage that relationship to gain knowledge, right? And it's those things you have to pay attention when you're, I think when you're starting to participate in anything, I think that you do, right? Pay attention to what other people are doing and how they're performing, and maybe try to observe their setbacks and note those. And yeah, it's super interesting how we're motivated extrinsically by the other athletes we hang out with. That's cool.
Yeah. The interesting one is that, with that time, we didn't have social media or cell phones or anything crazy. And so I really didn't know much about John, and I didn't know, what his story was. It was this like silent motivator. It was just something that I saw and something that sparked. And like I was mentioning, you know, we work with teenage kids and teenage athletes, and you know, a lot of them kind of have that pivotal moment, where they see somebody may not ever get the chance to talk to that person, or like you're saying, you know, gain that knowledge or whatever. But, I had the opportunity, and I'm not sure if John would remember this or not, but in Las Vegas, during Interbike a few years back, he was in the elevator and we were going to the same floor. And I actually told him the story. I said, "Hey, John, just to let you know, this is, you know, I gained my motivation to do some solo 24-hour racing after seeing you at Hartwood Hills." And I described the whole thing, and he was like, "Oh man, that's really cool." And he was a rep at the time for Louis Garneau, and that's why he was at Interbike. But I it was interesting to hear a lot of the other backstory about his car accident and, you know, the beginnings of, you know, of his career kind of that came way before I even had optics of him.
Yeah. He was fun to talk to. I just think at that Ride the Divide 10-year anniversary thing, his interview with Mike Dion was so, it just really, really rung the bells for me, because he's kind of in that realm of, you know, the mental fortitude required and how these, whether it be a 24-hour event, even short track racing and stuff, you have to be of a certain mindset, right, to be able to do that, or at least switch into that mindset for the time being when if you're doing something short track, you can like, okay, reset, you know, and then do something outstanding, and then when you finish, kind of like reset back to real life. It's a really interesting it was a really interesting conversation. I'm glad I reached out to him. I hope everyone enjoyed it. It's one of the top podcasts I have so far in such a short period of time. There's been a lot of hits on that one, so I'm happy. I was happy to connect with him. It was good.
Oh, yeah. That's great. I have to be honest. I have to go back and into the archives there and go back a number of podcasts to play catch up. I've had such a crazy wild spring and summer here.
Yeah.
I'm finally getting into a place where obviously you and I can connect and then, you know, catch up on all the great podcasts that you've been putting out.
Oh, thanks. Well, again, I don't know, where do you want to begin with this discussion? Cause I kind of, I guess what I foresaw happening, it was like, maybe we would do a breakdown of what you've seen in the last 2 months with my activity. I'm not sure if you've been delving into my Whoop account or not to see what I've been up to, but all I've been trying to do is match strain with recovery in some sense, focusing on sleep and just looking at my behavior over the last couple months and try to see how it correlates to recovery, basically, which seems to me, it's like, that's, I think Tyler Hamilton said it once, it's like with his athletes that he trains with, Tyler Hamilton training, it's like, you know, we want to work hard, we want to train hard, but you want to recover harder. And that kind of resonated with me a little bit as well, because you can't train hard unless you're recovered. So I don't know, where do you want to start?
Yeah. Let's pick up on that. I mean, you know, my favorite saying is that there's no such thing as overtraining. There's only under recovery. Mm. And, you know, to dissect that a little bit or get a little more granular is like every athlete I work with can handle a different workload. So, you know, like, let's say someone's working, you know, doing 10 hours a week, someone else is doing 15, someone's capable of doing 20. It's really dependent on how they choose to recover and monitoring that recovery. And what we tend to find, you know, using some of the metrics that are available from, you know, devices like Whoop is that older athletes tend to take a little bit longer to recover. And to tend to recover quicker from long endurance bouts, recover quicker from longer endurance bouts, but take longer from shorter intense bouts. And that's just, you know, kind of that switch over time of that fast twitch muscle fiber changing over to slow twitch muscle fiber. And, you know, the body, you know, over the years, kind of learning what it can and can't do for good recovery. So obviously sleep is a really good one. You know, to be doing, you know, your nutrition, your hydration, especially in the summer, is really, really important. And, you know, we could go down the list of modules that you can, you know, you can do. One of the most valuable for me has been like compression legs. Mm. You know, like whether it's like a Normatec or I use a brand called Speedhound. I really find that an hour in those Speedhound legs in like an anti-gravity chair, you know, I'll throw on the noise canceling headphones and listen to a podcast or some meditative music. I really find the next day that the legs kind of really come back and the recovery score tends to be, you know, fairly high. You know, and I would say like hydration and sleep are the other two that are really, really important, for my personal recovery. And I know like monitoring different athletes, you know, their recovery, you know, can be greatly affected by sleep or, you know, can be marginally affected by increased amounts of sleep. So, you know, I really, really like technology that picks up on not consistency, but inconsistency within individuals. And, you know, like I look at your data pretty much on a regular basis. And, you know, as of lately, you're playing with, you know, matching recovery and strength, which is really great for someone who is in a, you know, more of a maintenance phase right now, trying to maintain work, home life, and still get out and ride and enjoy the rest of the summer and not really put themselves into the red. So, you know, that can be really good for like mental, emotional health and overall physical health. And just to have that little bit of extra energy to kind of get, you know, day-to-day stuff done. So, yeah, I really like being able to see that for accountability, you know, myself, but then also to be able to give athletes the right training load at the right time. So right now, if I was seeing you in the red, I would probably be questioning like, hey, man, like what's going on? Like, what are the activities that you're doing that are putting you there? You know, what is kind of, you know, the methodology behind your current thinking, you know, as an athlete and you know, probably make some suggestions based on that.
Just to maybe rewind a little bit. So I've been mentioning it a little bit on the podcast as a kind of a reverse sponsorship thing. So part of your program is you'd like your athletes to have a wearable and usually it's a Whoop strap, correct?
Yeah. Out of all the devices I've ever found, Whoop gives so much insight into what the athlete is currently doing. And I mean, even for me, like I think about coaching as like changing human behavior and like, that's really coaching at its simplest form. And I can only do so much with athletes. And if they have a wearable that shows them unequivocally, like what their sleep quality is, like what their sleep consistency is, what their strain is, all of those different things. And what we find is that athletes who are very accountable tend to start changing their behavior for the better. And then it helps me as a coach to then be able to, you know, adjust training loads and kind of get some insights into maybe their life that they might not, you know, be comfortable necessarily sharing. and, you know, kind of getting a better picture, because stress is stress is stress. Mm. And I really, really think that Whoop is that device that is giving coaches that insight into the full picture of what's going on with an athlete. So yeah, that is kind of my protocol for all of my athletes. I need to wear them 24 hours a day and you know, give me that bit of information so that I can work with them the best that I can.
And I'd say that even if you're not an athlete, even if you're a very, very low level athlete, I think that the insight you get from this wearable is pretty valuable. Like super valuable. Like, my lens on it is, so Whoop uses heart rate variability to kind of gauge recovery and fitness. And it uses heart rate variability, it uses respiration rate, it uses resting heart rate, max heart rate. So it measures all these things over the course of a day, and it calculates the amount of strain you put on your body by the amount of time you spend at different heart rate zones, correct?
Yeah, that's kind of it in a nutshell. It it uses heart rate variability, ongoing heart rate, and it calculates a strain. Maximum strain can be 21, and strain can be anything. It's life itself is a strain. Going for a walk, going for a run, doing intervals, they all add up. And so the maximum strain that you can achieve during a day is 21, which would mean you're in an overreaching phase. And, you know, it kind of guides you along, like, and helps you oscillate a little bit from like the high, maybe 18 to 21s, and tries to, you know, guide you down to maybe having a few days in like the low teens, you know, to promote recovery, depending on what it is that you're actually, you know, trying to achieve. And, you know, being an athlete or weekend warrior, it works really well. It gives a lot of insights, but being a human being, this thing can give you a lot of insights into how to maximize being the best version of yourself. And, you know, I know there's a lot of high performers who, you know, just do exercise for general health and wellness, but use Whoop to give them insights into when they're actually prime mentally, physically, emotionally to maybe have those tough discussions or phone calls or really resting and recovering before a flight to, you know, important business meetings or whatever it might be. The insights are valuable to anybody. So I don't necessarily think that you have to be an athlete. I think you can just be, you know, be you and still gain so much from what this product has to offer.
Yeah. And it's interesting too. I've noticed anecdotally, you know, and I think I'm pretty analytical in certain ways, and I tend to geek out on the data. And you can anecdotally look at low recovery days, and I'll go to work and I'll just be a wreck. I can't focus. I have no mental acuity. You know, I'm repellent. You know, like not a lot of people hang around you. You know, you know what I mean? It's interesting. It's just if you and that comes with trying to be more mindful throughout the day. I don't meditate as much as I do, but I'm trying to be more mindful during the day.
Yeah,
as a mindfulness exercise. And then on those green days when you're like high yellow or you're in the green, so Whoop will give you a recovery score, like, you know, up to like 33%, up to 66%, up to 100%. It's like red, yellow, green. And when you're in the green, I find my focus is better. I'm friendlier. I have more energy. And that on top of, a little bit of self-care that we can talk about later has been pivotal in just not only I've noticed, especially with the self-care thing, basically getting in the habit of rolling and stretching my lower body, definitely before bed, like you said, the compression kind of thing. What I kind of look at my legs as toothpaste tubes, you know what I mean? And when I lay down to roll, I like ankles up to my hips. I kind of like I'm rolling all. I think of it as it's probably the wrong term, but I'm thinking I'm rolling the lactate out of my body right into my closer to my liver. And I find if I don't roll before bed, I just my legs are pedaling all night, right? So it's all these little things that add up to getting that good recovery. And I've noticed a huge change in my day-to-day function by focusing on just those little things, those little recovery things that have been really great. Yeah.
My biggest takeaway from the use of Whoop is the level of awareness that it brings. If you wake up in the green, you kind of give yourself a permission slip to like take on the world. It's like if somebody wants to throw something extra on your plate, you're like, yeah, man, I'm in the green. I'll take that on. Or the polar opposite, where it's like, I just woke up. I've got a 12% recovery. I've had some really stressful days. I think I'm going to put off that meeting that I have with, you know, this tourism company or an athlete or whatever, because, you know, as a high performer, I think you always want to make sure that you're operating at 100% or giving 110% of what you have that day. And for me, I kind of shy away from those big mental exercises where I have to be spot on the red days. And I also really like it because it can be like 25 degrees, perfect weather, a light breeze. And you're looking outside and you see all these people going for bike rides and hikes and runs. And, you know, if I'm in the red, I'm like, you know what? Yeah. I got a big day tomorrow and I can't spend that little bit of resources that I have today because it's nice out. Like I can actually feel and write myself permission slip like it's okay today to be still or to relax or to do stuff. So it's that awareness, I think, takes away a lot of the stress of I gotta go, I gotta be out there, I gotta be doing it because everyone else is.
Yeah. So, and yeah. I think that really adds to your or for me, definitely it relaxes me a little bit. You know, just it removes that desperation of thinking you have to go out and pin it all the time. Like, you know, yesterday we just took, you know, the family got up, got in the car, went to Kimberley just to hang out. And I knew based on my, you know, my quote unquote training and recovery data that surrounded that day, I felt good about it. It's like, you know, I could relax, you know, and it sounds so lame to be counting on, you know, technology to kind of guide your behavior. But at the same time, I don't trust myself to do that. You know, even though I'm maybe listening to my body and like, oh, I don't really feel like doing this or that, but I'm going to go do it anyway, meh, kind of thing. And you go out and then now you're less recovered the next day.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's super interesting.
Yeah. I really like the fact too, that it scores different activities. Like when I was training, really hard and racing, you know, different types of stage races and stuff. I used to tell my wife, I'm like, I can't take the dogs for a walk. Like, you're going to have to do it. Or she'd be like, yeah, let's just go for a walk. And I'd be like, no, you know, I got to ride instead. Like, I didn't see value in the mundane stuff, like taking my dog for a walk or, yard work or stuff like that. Now I see movement. Every little bit of movement that I do as contributing to the greater picture. And I think, you know, that whole, you know, like the whole primal endurance type, you know, thinking, it's like every time you're moving, you're contributing to your fitness. Just because you went hard on the bike and did a run doesn't mean the rest of the day you lay on the couch and get a massage and put your feet up like a lot of, you know, quote unquote professional athletes or whatever. I really think that moving and staying on your feet is always promoting a good, healthy lifestyle and helping to increase recovery, you know, at lower intensities. So
yeah.
I've really grown a lot, you know, using, you know, this product and obviously, you know, having the insights from being a coach for so long.
Yeah. I think that the idea of that is active recovery, right? Like you just getting your, just like, not blowing the cobwebs out, but I've found the same thing. It's like on a red day, I can hop on the bike. And, you know, I call them t-shirt rides, like just hop on the bike with a t-shirt and go find somewhere flat and just spin around in the flats. And actually I did that the other day. I had a phone call for about an hour with Matt Bain and I was riding around and it didn't even register on Whoop. Like, you know, it'll give you the heartbeat. So if it registers a high strain or some sort of strain, it'll give you the heartbeat. And then you go, oh, I did something, and you press it and it says, I'm going to process this activity. Oh, okay. I didn't even set that off. And the next day I felt great. And it was just, I think it was just like going through the motions and, you know, didn't even sweat or breathe hard. And conversely, you know, a couple of days before that, I got home, you know, after I'm a shipper receiver, so I have a pretty active job. Like I'm walking around a lot, I'm lifting, I'm pushing and up and down in vehicles and whatnot. And I got home and my strain was okay. You know, generally I'll generate up to say 8 to 9 strain just with my job. But I've noticed, and even though my monthly assessment told me that I've gotten less fit, which I think I can explain, my strain levels have gone down. Like right now, when I walk to work now, I don't generate any strain. Like I can get to work on a 0, which I think is really interesting because before it would be like a 4. And I think that goes back to a little bit of the self-care I've been doing. Like before the Lost Elephant race I did a couple months ago, I took a month off the bike, a complete month. And all I did was go to physiotherapy and get on a program of fixing what was going on with my legs, IT band, stiff hips. And just doing that, I think, has removed the strain from my mellow activities because now I'm not fighting my fascia, right? I'm not fighting the connective tissue to move anymore. Now I'm just moving a lot more freely. And it's been profound. And it's such so simple. It's not like I'm not doing an hour of yoga, yoga's fantastic. But I've been trying to get into yoga, but right now it's just like the rolling the back out, rolling the legs out, you know, hamstrings, hips. I haven't been able to sit cross-legged. I can't remember the last time. That's how stiff my hips are. And now I can actually sit cross-legged on the floor, you know, and that's all been driven by just the self-care thing and just trying to be the best working machine possible, I think.
Yeah, I think what you nailed right there was the power of Whoop. So you just said, you know, I used to walk to work. It was a 4. Now I can register as 0.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's like, that goes back to kind of the maximum aerobic function, low intensity movement all the time and self-care. And you're increasing your mobility. And when mobility is in the right, you know, is correct, you're not fighting anything. So mobility, if you think about that, so you walk and it registers a 4, it's about what, a 30 minute walk?
Like 20 minutes. Yeah, 20 minutes.
20 minutes. So yeah, so extrapolate that. So if you take a 4 down to a 0 and your biomechanics are in line, extrapolate that to 10, 12 or 14 hours on the bike. If your biomechanics are working effectively, you're going to have these massive gains.
Oh, totally.
And yeah, so when I look at coaching and I look at you know, an individual, that is really like the secret sauce. Is like, if you have good body awareness and can self-assess and you have the data to back it up with something like Whoop, we can work on the things that are going to give bigger gains. So maybe it's improvement of sleep, maybe it's improvement of sleep consistency, maybe it's recovery, maybe it's you know, somebody has a really sedentary job, right? Like sitting at a desk, maybe it's every hour on the hour an alarm goes off and you do some movement. Like all of these things are really kind of the base foundation of health and making yourself better so that when you get on the bike or you go to tackle those bigger activities or events, that you're in line, right? Biomechanically and healthy. So I love the fact that you've taken technology and you've done something as simple as like looked at the strain score of walking to work and seen how that has changed when you've worked on something else. And that's really the power of what technology can allow us to do. I think most people just want to ride their bike lots and ride their bike hard, but there's so many other pillars that contribute to event day or just the success that they're going to have, or even longevity, you know, in the sport. So I really think it's a great tool.
Yeah. In terms of longevity, I was talking to Ross Burridge a couple of days ago, and we were just talking about, you know, age, getting older. And I said, you know what, dude, you know what I want to be? I want to be, there's every town has it. You have that 75-year-old guy who's just a freak. And people are like, who the fuck is that guy? Look at that guy. He's ripped and he's moving all the time. It's like, I want to be that freaky gray-haired guy who everyone's just like, wow, that guy just won't stop. That's the guy I want to be. So I know, it's the idea of changing the lens from lifespan
to health span. It's like, I want to hit 90 and then just fucking die, right? Just, I don't want to hit 70 and then live another 20 years on pills and medication to basically extend my lifespan. I want to have awesome health span. And then when the body is just like, you know what, it's I'm just going to give up the ghost.
Yeah. Well, you hit on it. I mean, like, that's like kind of Stoic philosophy is like, you know, lifespan versus life lived. Mm. You know, they're two very different things, because a lot of people, once they get into their like 70s, 80s, 90s, they might be still alive, but they've stopped living. Mm. And, you know, some people have a life where they only make it to 40 or 50 or 60 or 65 or whatever, but have kind of, you know, lived a healthier, more active, more adventurous, full, you know, lifestyle. And, you know, that's, you know, just, you know, something to, you know, to really, you know, embrace, I guess, as we are getting older, is that like every day counts. What you do every day, it's, you know, we can't be doing everything we do for tomorrow. It has to be right now, present in the moment.
Yeah. So what I was saying earlier about, so I got my monthly assessment. Finally, I think because I missed a recovery on the Lost Elephant, I slept, but it didn't register as sleep, I think, because it was just so crappy. I missed that July monthly assessment, but I got my August one back. And according to the data, I'm less fit. And anecdotally, I can argue that that's not the case. I don't feel that way. I feel fitter than I've ever felt, I think, lately. Just in my efficiency, the length of time I'm riding, I get back from, say, a 2-hour ride at 70, 80% of my heart rate, and I could probably go and do another hour of that, you know, but I just don't have the time to do that. But I think what happened is I've had a lot of personal stress, and what you were saying, stress is stress is stress. Like, anecdotally, I saw that happening, and it's just like all my numbers were down, and it was just like, what is going on? Like, and that's what was going on. It was just general stress. And I noticed even my sleep, you can look at your sleep and your resting heart rate over the night of sleep, that was up. And it wasn't on account of overtraining or overreaching. It was just, I think, running a little bit in the red because of personal stress. And so it's interesting, because that gives you another lens to look at your life through, and another way. It's like, okay, well, I need to deal with that. I need to make changes with that. Either I need to talk to somebody about that, or talk to myself about that and figure out what the hell's going on, or whatever it is. But that was insight as well. And that anecdotally just showed me that, you know, doesn't matter what kind of strain you're putting on your body. Like, the Whoop thing will register when I'm playing with the kids. It'll say, oh, we got an activity. You were doing something for an hour. It's like, yeah, I was bouncing on the trampoline with my kids for an hour, right? And it just, like, you generated like 6-7 strain. It's like, wow, awesome. That means I don't have to go for a big ride tonight. I could just go for a little one or whatever. So yeah. It's interesting. So I was bummed to see that result, because intrinsically I don't feel that it's correct, but I haven't collected enough data. I don't think, like, I think you need probably months of data to actually see a pattern where you can, what do you think about that?
So I think that the data kind of tightens up. I mean, it uses AI and it learns your behaviors, and, you know, I think that Whoop is a really, really powerful tool for those who have an open mind. And for those who are not looking necessarily for affirmation, but are looking for insights and looking for doorways that they can walk through. So a door will be just cracked open about sleep or about recovery, or, you know, maybe a resting heart rate is elevated or HRV is down. I think what it does for that intrinsically motivated individual is it forces them to do a self-assessment. I've had a number of athletes who I've worked with who I've requested they get on the Whoop strap and app, and their personalities were of the nature that they wanted the app to tell them exactly how they thought they felt. So, you know, kind of a different aspect. It's like, oh, well, it said I am in the red and I feel better than that. Or they're always looking for confirmation as opposed to looking at it as, oh, okay, there's some insights. There's something coming down the pipe. And the thing about heart rate variability is it's detecting changes in our nervous system way before we can detect them with body awareness. And so it's creating, I think, that it's an intersection of time, right? We might feel one way, but our body is processing what happened days from the days before, and there's a cumulative stress and there's a cumulative positive or accumulative negative stuff going on. And we need to pay attention to that, even if that's not how we particularly feel. Because if we're just after confirmation, we're going to find ourselves combating with the information and the insights it's giving us. And I think that if we use it as like a yellow light, right? Like it's like a just a level of awareness to be like, hey, you're at the top of the red. Maybe today you should take it a little bit easier. I don't think we can ever go wrong. But if we're looking to dismiss it and go, I'm not red, I'm green, I think that's where people combat the technology and the insights. And so there are some personalities that don't necessarily play well with the data and the insights. And I think it takes time for those to understand how it works and that it's forecasting for you. And a lot of what's happening in real time may slightly differ because it is actually looking into the future for you.
That's interesting. I feel like, yeah, I don't think I'm that kind of person. I think I can look at that, the data, and then, you know, just intrinsically look at myself. And 'cause there were a couple days where I was in the red, like 33 or whatever. I think maybe during the Lost Elephant, I was down in the teens, but I just overreached anyway, because at the end of the day, I was like, yeah, but I feel pretty good. Like, I feel okay. So, you know, I'll just go out for, you know, just that slow roll, that slow kind of increased intensity until the body starts saying, okay, yeah, no, you could feel it. You just, your lack power or you, your respiration goes up. Yeah, using the word red again, but you get in the red a little faster when you're in the red. You know what I mean? When you're recovered in the green, it seems like you almost feel unstoppable. You know, like you could just go. But when you're in the red, I think if your mind is telling you, you know what, just go, you need some activity, you know, start as an active recovery activity and then kind of increase your effort over time and then pay attention. Your body will tell you. It's like, oh, no, that's, I'm a bit, yeah, your heart will start to kind of, yeah, it'll top out kind of thing. It'll say,
I think where there's a lot of value is like when we're in the green, I think you can handle a long, long endurance day, or you could handle short bouts of high intensity really well. But as you get into the yellow, you'll deal with both of those, you know, long endurance efforts and high intensity just a little bit, you know, less. Like you might not recover from it quite as well. And then when you're in the red, I think your ability to deal with big stress, big endurance days or higher intensity is even less beneficial. So, you know, I really look at like, oh, if I really want to go hard in something, whether it's, you know, an office day in meetings or on the bike, I really like to see that I'm top of the yellow in the green, because I know the long-term accumulative effect, my body is primed to deal with that strain and to recover better than if I was in the red or the low yellow. So it's just like, you know, it's kind of allowing you to forecast a little bit better what the days ahead might bring if you choose to, you know, really stomp on it, or if you choose to sit back a little bit. And that's where stuff like peaking for an event or, you know, having something that you really, really want to be like optimized and primed for, you know, a few behavioral changes, you know, maybe, you know, minimize your alcohol intake, go to bed consistently for 4 to 5 days before, get a little extra sleep, maybe take a nap. And you really see that when you start being aware of that self-care, you do see that swing to the green and more consistently and recovering quicker. So I love it. And today, like working with young athletes, one of the I held these little coaching meetings where a bunch of coaches we would all get together, and we talk about challenges with modern athletes, whether they were, you know, teens and 20s, 30s, or master's level. And what we found that the big difference between like a master's level athlete who's been doing it for a long time and new athletes, or young athletes, is the level of body awareness or self-awareness that they have is very, very limited. And, you know, it was a Pilates instructor that was in the group that said, yeah, I get these elite Nordic skiers and biathletes to lay down on a mat. And I asked them, I say, how does your body feel? Like, what can you tell me about, you know, about your back, your neck, your shoulders, your legs, your ankles, like really do a self-assessment. And every single one of them would be like, oh, I'm fine. And then she would, you know, just manipulate something ever so slightly and cause this like pain and discomfort in them and find these imbalances that were so huge. And she's like, this is a real missing link in athletics that a lot of coaches and a lot of trainers and people that work with athletes don't really have a whole lot of control over or insights. And I think that this accountability that you know, Whoop creates for body awareness is, and to do self-assessment is really, really powerful. And the majority of the people I'm finding are attracted to Whoop in my circle are those who are over 50. They're like, I want to play. I want to play as many times during the week as I can, with whether it's winter season or summer. They've got their two or three different activities, and they're using it now to gain insights into, you know, when they should just back off so that they can have like a great downhill ski weekend, or maybe put in, you know, some big days cross country skiing or fat biking or whatever it is, or do some multi sport days. So I really you know, once again, just think that it's such a powerful tool for people of all abilities and skill levels or athletic levels.
I wonder if that's why you see a lot of the top level athletes in endurance sports in their 40s and 50s, because of that body awareness.
You know, I picked up on that when you're chatting with John Stamstead in your last podcast, and I think there's like, you know, they call it like old guy fitness, where it's just that like body awareness of knowing that you can't go into the red, like, you know, you can't go 80% or 90% and hold it. You know, you've had that experience so many times that you kind of sit at like 70, 75% and maybe oscillate into that, those upper zones. So that is definitely a body awareness of like heart rate and respiratory rate and that kind of thing. I also think it's a big switchover from, you know, fast twitch muscle fiber from when we're young to slow twitch when we're older. Every year we kind of lose some fast twitch just naturally. Our heart rate also drops, you know, a beat every year or so as we age, like our maximum heart rate. So I think we become more in tune with that endurance end of things, and become more efficient as we get older, just as a byproduct, because we don't really have like, you know, fourth and fifth gear anymore. You know, we're kind of stuck in third as we get older. Yeah,
I noticed that. That's beneficial though, I think, because you save the revs for when you need it, right? That's kind of my, you know, take on the handful of races I've done is you see a lot of the young guys just take off the line. And all I keep echoing in my head, it's like, man, we've got all day. It's like, guys need to dial it back a little bit. And, it's interesting. Yeah. It's an interesting observation. So
yeah,
go ahead.
And a lot of, you know, folks in like their 40s and 50s and 60s, what ends up happening, you know, is they'll have a job and a family and everything else. And then what they'll do, kind of like yourself, is, you know, go out at the end of the day or in the evening and do a workout. And, you know, you think about, you know, let's say you have a strain score of like 10 or 12 or 15 going into a workout, that means like that workout that you're going to do for 2 hours is going to have actually more effect on your strain and give you a greater training effect. If you're looking to be, you know, endurance, you know, increase your endurance. You don't want to be doing your aerobic base work in the morning when you're fresh. You actually want to do it further down the line when the stress is already accumulated. And so it's like putting stress on top of stress.
Oh, I see.
Bang for your buck, 2 hours in the evening is like 4 hours in the morning, right? So, you know, we can use these strain scores and we can use, you know, our lifestyle that is typically a little bit more strenuous than younger folks, you know, to our advantage to keep building on that aerobic base and on that fitness.
Yeah, it's been really cool. So tell me, coach, what's looking at my data, what do you see? What do you see as a 49-year-old guy?
So, you know, looking at data is very, very individual. And, you know, we look at things like sleep consistency and sleep quality, and we look at the amount of strain, you know, that the athlete puts on, and we look at those patterns. And typically, you know, someone like yourself, we're going to see, you know, summertime, you're probably going to accumulate, you know, just motivationally, you're going to accumulate more fitness in like the spring and kind of peak out somewhere in the summer. And then we're going to start to see as the seasons change, as summer kind of starts to wind down, kids go back to school, work picks up and other responsibilities kind of come full circle. We're going to start to see that decrease, in fitness. And I think that's kind of the spot where you're going, or, you know, where you've headed in the last little bit. You know, major event of the year was kind of accomplished. Now we're going into more of like a base building, and maintenance phase. And I think that's, you know, for you, a really positive thing. If you were still burning it, you know, in the red every day, you know, it would make, I think, accumulation of new fitness a lot more difficult. Mm. So what we've, you know, in any sport, we want to see a training cycle. Like training is not a ramp that continues to go up. Mm. It oscillates up and down and up and down. And we would get more concerned if we were seeing a decrease in fitness coming in like March, April, and May, if you were on the decline there. But because we're seeing it kind of falling in line with the fall season, you know, we're, you know, there's been a lot of stresses, obviously, in the world. You know, we deal with personal stresses and all of those things. So, you know, what we're seeing trending with you is fairly normal in the fall. This is kind of the end of summer leading into fall. This is where we kind of see that kind of trend happen. I like to call like the end of the summer or the fall, like more of the fun phase. Mm. Go out, enjoy the changing of the leaves and, you know, start adapting to the shorter days of light. We're going to start getting less vitamin D. It's going to get darker sooner. We're going to have to start changing our diet a little bit to maybe have a few more calories to, you know, compensate for, you know, having to heat ourselves a little bit more during the day. So, you know, what I see so far, you know, with your limited use is that, you know, things are on track for where we're going. You know, we do see some days that have limited activity, but still high stress. So obviously, you know, we've chatted just about trying to figure out some ways of getting life stresses in order and in line so that when we want to start pushing on volume, you know, as time goes on, that you'll be able to accommodate that as opposed to having, you know, too high a strain, you know, moving forward in the base building months.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see what occurs because I feel like right now I'm so pumped to go fat biking. And so, you know, I think my activity will probably increase again once the snow flies. I think we'll see another spike or another ramp, if you will. I don't really have any races or anything planned in the winter, but do you think that's valuable to have some seasonal goal to look forward to? Like I've never been a super like heavy racer guy. And obviously because of my family situation, it's hard to get away on a weekend to attend an event. But do you think that's important to have at least one thing to kind of work toward?
You know, I think it depends on the individual. I mean, I do truly believe that you know, most of us are somewhat goal oriented. And they don't necessarily have to be events that you pay for or register for or wear a number plate or get a tracker. I think that creating some adventures that will continuously challenge your fitness or your health, your skill set, your ability to, you know, be logistically sound and organized, test gear, that kind of stuff is important. I think it was like the last Friday, I was out with a client, who wants to do a 24-hour solo race in July of 2021. And, you know, his big question was like, I don't even know if I can do half of that. And I was like, well, let's go find out. So we set a date, we put it on the calendar. I gave him a month to kind of prepare for it. We kind of did a mini taper. We chatted about a few logistics. And then we went out and got in like a 140 kilometers, a single track. It was about a 12 and a half, 13 hour day in total with about just under 11 hours of moving time. And those are the things that show you where you're at. I mean, and expose maybe some of the shortcomings. And then from there, you really gain perspective and you can start to build, your personal inventory, of tasks. And I can, you know, easily generate I can strategically generate a program that will help, with some of those weaknesses or things that were exposed during those bigger efforts. So having some adventures or some things on the calendar that you follow through with, I think are definitely, important for sure.
So you are, so the whole idea of connecting with you and getting this wearable is that I'm trying to train myself up for a crack at the Tour Divide next year. And, what kind of strategy would you follow for building someone up to that? Cause I kind of feel like, and this is maybe just my own misguided self-confidence, I feel like if I maintained exactly what I'm doing right now, based on the short races I've done, like the multi-day races I've done, I think I can do it. Like, I think I'm pretty confident that I'm going to be able to do pretty well for myself. I'm not going to fucking win it or anything, but I feel like I'm ready. I feel like anything I do now is just going to make me more ready for something like that. Cause for me, it's more of a mental challenge and a logistical challenge than it is a physical challenge. Like I know what I can peel off every day, like a couple hundred K a day. I know I can do that, but I'm not sure if I can do that for 3 weeks. But, so what do you see for a program for me?
Well, you know, kind of peering into that, I mean, we have to make sure that your stoke stays high. So, you know, for us, we can't interject too many times with too many epic training sessions. We have to make sure that you maintain a really good balance of health. So that's mobility, that's home life, that's work life, and just keeping that stoke really high, because like you said, it's more of a mental game. Muscle memory is there. I mean, you know you can ride a bike for a number of days. And once you know you can do that, then it really comes down to, like you said, it's logistics. It's where do you get food? How do you maintain good nutrition and good hydration when you're involved with an event like this? Like I personally resonated really, really big with John during that podcast, because he was saying, you know, I would, if I did it again, I would bring supplements and vitamins and like, you know, and I was like, that is so on par with what I would do. I would bring daily greens. I would bring, multivitamin, multi-mineral. I would try my very hardest to keep that Formula One engine that you've created running like a Formula One engine with the right fuel. I would try not to, have it go downhill because of the fuel sources or hydration or lack thereof. And I also think that, you know, someone's mental state going into an event can really, really shape the outcome. You can be the healthiest and fittest individual you've ever been, but if a couple of days leading into, or a couple of days before the event, something traumatic happens in life, or you know, you have stress that's coming from external sources that makes you question your commitment to the process or to doing the event, it can really change how your body and mind are connected and what your overall output will be, you know, negative thought processes and stuff. And so, you know, for you, I'm thinking it's a very holistic approach that we need to have, you know, moving, you know, from now and until then. Obviously there's more volume to be done. There's a consistent volume to be done. There's strength training that needs to be done. There's range of motion and mobility that needs to be maintained. But those things really evolve and they change kind of, you know, every month based on what you're capable of doing and what you feel like doing and, you know, how you're progressing.
I definitely feel like I need to be doing some strength. Definitely. I don't want to go to the gym. So I just want to get a kettlebell or something, do some stuff from home. I can't afford to go to the gym. I can't afford a membership. and you know, there's one literally a 30-second walk from my house. I could just walk there, you know, yeah. But I can't afford that. So that's something. And yeah, the nutrition thing is a bit of a worry for me. Cause like I can carry the food that I know my body responds to. I can carry 2, 3, 4 days of that quite easily. But I know that when I hit a gas station and if I eat a big carb bomb, right? Like the beginning of the Lost Elephant, that there were some baked goods they gave out and I had this cinnamon bun and first day in, you know, kind of the morning, oh, I'm gonna have some breakfast. And I nibbled a bit of it and I couldn't do it, man. My body was just rejecting it. Like I think I'm pretty fat adapted now. And every time I put carbohydrates, especially a large quantity of carb into my body, it doesn't like it. So I'm thinking of all these gas stations I'm going to hit. And, you know, I guess I can just live on olives. If I can find a jar of olives or something, I'll be able to fuel myself with that. But that is a concern for sure. Being able to carry enough of the foods that I know fuel my body efficiently.
Yeah.
So yeah,
it's that micronutrient profile. I mean, I think that like a multi-mineral, a multivitamin and a daily greens, and maybe even like a 16 mushroom blend or, you know, finding like little things that, you know, every day you're kind of topping up the micronutrients so that when you are dumping in, you know, things that are questionable or marginal at best because of the choices that are available, that at least you're covering the micronutrient profile that'll help digest that. And things won't start to accumulate in a negative way quite as quickly. It's really about biding your time. I mean, the faster you can get through that event, you know, with decent nutrition, I think the better off you are. I think the longer you go eating, you know, the gas station type stuff is, you know, that's the long-term effects I think are even, greater.
Yeah. So the focus on getting real food, right? When you can get it, like if you hit a breakfast joint, even if it's a fast food breakfast joint, if you can get some eggs and some bacon in you, like just some real good food rather than Twinkies and ho-hos and all that crap. Yeah.
What it really comes down to, I think, you know, that a principle I really like is what it was Team Sky when they first kind of came around in the tour. There was one of the directors of the team. He truly believed in this thing called the principle of marginal gains, and it wasn't that the team needed to train harder or faster or whatever. It was really about the big picture. And every time, you know, you get to a new place, and you know, for them it was like sanitizing the bedrooms so that no one got sick, and you know, having consistency of like water and all of these, you know, little tiny things that would just help to minimize the potential for something negative to come into the body and create big upheaval within the homeostasis, if you will, of the rider. And I think that, you know, I think that if we can create some consistency, you know, for ourselves, like, you know, good self-care every night, like, you know, during the Tour Divide, even if you're spent, you know, just getting that tennis ball or whatever out, or you know, having the greens or the multi-minerals, multivitamins, staying on top of those little things, those are the things that over time will add up. Like even, you know, making sure that your chain is clean and lubed before, you know, you take off every day, you know, air pressure in the tires, because we start to see those little things add up to, you know, not causing accidents, not having broken chains or mechanicals, not, you know, having GI issues or not succumbing to, you know, cramps or heat stress. So I really think it's when we're in events like that, we have to just focus on all the little details, because that occupies A, our mind, and then B, it helps run prevention for a lot longer, as opposed to just like pinning it and going until, you know, something blows up, body or bike, and then trying to fix it after the fact. You know, really be forward thinking and using those same principles in training and stuff is still, and in life is still kind of part of the preparation process.
Yeah, I know there's a lot of divisiveness out there in terms of quote unquote stretching, whether it's actually beneficial. I've heard different things about the whole stretching idea. I guess it's important to stretch at a certain point in your activity, like when you're warm. But I found that what I said before is just getting on that self-care regimen, and every morning and every night I get up, I do the same kind of things to settle down my restless leg syndrome, if you will. But I found on the Lost Elephant, I still went right before I went to bed. It only takes 10 minutes, but just to stretch the quads out, you know, I have a cork ball that I carry and just running that over my muscles, like basically massaging my legs down a little bit before I go down to sleep, helped a lot. And yeah, so I agree, like the self-care, it's like you have two machines you need to take care of when you're out there. You got to take care of your bike and you got to take care of yourself. So,
yeah. And that's the thing too, is I can't make a program, or I can't make a list, or I can't make a, you must do this every day for people, unless I know and understand what their anomalies are. And if they have the ability to do, you know, a really good self-assessment, like if we focus in on our weaknesses, you know, it'll only help our strengths. But if we focus on our strengths, you know, you get these tiny gains when you only focus on your strengths, but you make really big gains when you're vulnerable and you expose what your weaknesses are. And so, you know, that's just part of the process of preparation for these things. If, you know, people have very poor sleep or poor nutrition or poor hydration or poor range of motion or poor anything, you know, if we focus in on those smaller details, we'll make bigger gains. And I think our introduction, you know, you reached out to me because you had major GI issues during one of your first events, and we just addressed that one thing. And then efforts after that, you know, once you had that awareness, became different. And then even before the Lost Elephant, you were having some leg issues. So, you know, my advice was simply to don't even worry about the riding, like just get the mobility back. And the riding will come. The muscle memory is there. Mm. You've ridden for years. So even just, you know, from a coaching perspective, having the ability to give people the permission slip to let the volume or let the intensity go and focus in on the other parts that are weak, you know, through those self-assessments and those in the conversations, I think that's really the key for, you know, moving forward and, you know, making the biggest gains possible.
Yeah, I wasn't
the least amount of effort.
Yeah, totally. I wasn't taking a month off the bike, almost, well, 3 weeks, 3.5 weeks. It didn't worry me. You know, I kind of made that decision before that, and I always kind of did that anyway. Like I would do a hard taper pretty much 2 weeks before an event. I would just say, I'm not going to ride my bike for 2 weeks. Like I'm just not going to bother doing it because I know what my fitness is like. And, you know, I have the mental fortitude to kind of push through these events. But to take that month off, I didn't lose. And in fact, I gained fitness. I would imagine I gained fitness by.
Well, you gained your ability to use that fitness by being recovered and topping up on all of the stores in the body that need to be present to put out those efforts. I mean, we look at from a physiological standpoint, it's what I do today is going to benefit me in 21 days. If there's some intensity or volume that I'm going to put in. So, you know, we talked about that after the lost elephant where, you know, I said, well, in 21 days from now, you're going to feel great.
Oh my God.
Because of that volume and everything. And that's the part that a lot of people don't get, that 21 days to an event, you're not adding any fitness. You're just depleting resources. So you want to spend that last 21 days topping up the fuel tank and all the micronutrients in the body and getting all the mobility and range of motion all in line and fussing over your gear and getting your mental state to a point where you're stoked to ride your bike gets bigger every day. And then you got to ride that out. You know, there's a very important process there psychologically, just as well as physically that are at play.
Yeah, it was, it's really nice to have done a few events and not have to worry the night before too much about what you've packed. You know, I think when James and I were hanging out in Cranbrook the night before, I could feel like, I think it was his first big endurance event, and I could feel his anxiety. You know, I could feel him, you know, looking at his bike, and meanwhile I was just kind of chilled out on the bed with my bike in front of me, all packed and ready to go. And you know, it's like that experience goes a long way, right?
Yeah. And experience and age.
Yeah.
I mean, I think, you know, when you look at someone who's, I mean, James, for the listeners who
he's
are,
he's a beast, by the way.
He's a beast. I think he's 26, turning 27, young, super motivated, detail oriented, a dream to work with as a coach. One of the things there is that, you know, he does these events, as like a goal and a driving force for him, and you use these events as an escape. I think that like that is such a huge difference. Like even myself, when I went out and rode with one of my other athletes last week for, you know, almost 13 hours on the bike, you know, the next day I had a recovery score of like 83%. I'm in the green. I felt great. I realized, I'm like, yesterday wasn't about a physical endurance event or thing for me. It was about escaping, you know, work and home life and everything, you know, that surrounded that. And I just got super charged, like by the ability to get to spend a day uninterrupted and have fun on my bike.
Yeah.
And so I think that's kind of a big part. And it's interesting that with age, we pick up on those things with younger or lesser experienced riders, right? So that's where age definitely has its benefits, and you know, you can't fast forward that, unfortunately, with younger or newer athletes. Like it's like TTT, things take time, and you have to build that level of confidence and that calm and ask yourself, why am I doing this? And if your why is in line, you know, with your reality and your world, I think your approach to it is significantly different.
Yeah. It's interesting that, yeah, exactly. Escape is the key word for that. And, you know, we need that going back to John Stamstead, right? We need that discomfort and that escape to do that. And it was interesting too, like, you know, I worked with James when he lived in Invermere, but we never really had a lot of time to kind of chat. And that was one of the things I really enjoyed about the events or the relationships you make. And it was one of those times where, you know, I know he's like, I'm basically, well, he's like half my age, just a little bit older than half my age. So I could see a couple times when we were riding together, he was a bit frustrated. And I was like, can I just pull the old guy card on you for a little bit? Can I just tell you something? And he's like, yeah, man, just tell me something. It's like, just slow down. Like, just, you know, like enjoy this. Like, this is such an escape for us and this is so good. And just try to enjoy every moment of it. And yeah, you feel like shit right now. Your mind is just like in a fog, and we all go through the fog, man. Like there were times out there, even on day one, halfway, you know, through, I'm like, what the fuck? It's so hot. Like my brake failed. This sucks. Like what the fuck? And then it just turns around, right? It turns around. So there's that experience thing, right? That came into play. But I so enjoyed like spending time riding bikes with him, you know, cause I'll probably never get to ride bikes with him. He lives in Calgary, you know, we may come out here hopefully and we can ride again, but it was just, he's a good dude, man. It was so fun just to hang out with him and chat. And yeah, that's the mental cleansing part of the events that I so enjoy is getting out and just escaping all that and being able to even have these deep conversations with people. And yeah, it's really good. Everyone should be doing these things, I think.
Yeah, I totally agree. I totally agree. It's the escapism part is so refreshing. I get my best ideas when I'm on the bike and, you know, just looking at the scenery and turning the pedal strokes over and the creative juices just kind of start flowing.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's an amazing privilege that we're capable of having.
Yeah, living in the mountains, man, it's so nice to be able to just, you know, yeah, like you said, it's a privilege to be able to, in Canada, to be able to just go where we want and ride almost anywhere we want, wherever the gravel will take us. You know, we're super lucky to be able to have access to that. Look at the sun. The sun is just shining on you right now.
Oh, man, it's like, yeah, the sun is just like...
What a beautiful spot.
It is quite nice here. I'll give you the full view here.
Wow.
It's just like beaming. Yeah. For those who don't, or didn't know, we planned this for a 7 a.m. Podcast, and the sun's just coming up. We're expecting a daily or at the high today of a 26. So, it's going to be a beautiful day. I'm spending the day with my wife on the river. We're gonna head on our pack rafts. We're gonna do a big float today and enjoy this beautiful sunny day.
Awesome. Well, I'm mindful of your time. I don't want to keep you too much. Did we cover a lot of stuff that you wanted to talk about, or?
I think for us, we just wanted to have a catch up. We've been trying to do this for probably 3 months now.
Yeah.
and my spring and summer have had, despite all the challenges in the world, got very busy. It was amazing to see the number of people who have gotten involved with cycling, who have bought new bikes, who have used Cycling 101 as a service provider for lessons, road bike fits, on trail mountain bike fits. Some new athletes have materialized as well for this fall, for 2021 season. So that's been amazing. I've had such a great summer, meeting new people and helping them improve their riding, in some way, shape or form. And I'm just so grateful. The silver lining of this whole COVID thing is, I got to work lots, got to work hard, and got to meet some amazing people, and hopefully made a bit of an impact on how they see riding, and maybe even made some lifelong cyclists out of a few newcomers to the sport.
That's great to hear. And you're a busy guy, but I know we met. I think the first time we met was when you handed me hashtag Purpose Hidden t-shirt at the Canmore Brewing Company, I think for the summit a little while ago, maybe 3 years ago we met. I'm really grateful for our relationship, and I never thought I'd actually have a coach, in this respect, and I never really knew what that meant to have a coach. it's not just about the training and the advice and the nutrition, but it's you've been a good friend, man. You've been, an ear that I can talk to, and so I'm getting all emotional. But it's been good. It's been a life-changing thing for me to have kind of the guidance and the care that you give your athletes is quite nice. It's not just about the bike, right? It's about the whole package, right? And I think you do a fantastic job and staying in touch and guiding your athletes to be better humans. And I just want to thank you for that. And I want to thank you for supporting the podcast. I remember the first time when I kind of branched out and we were texting. I was at work and you were like, dude, I want you to put a logo on my site, and I'm going to send you something for that right now. And it wasn't even a can I, it was just like, I'm going to do it. And then I got an email, boom. And it was like, you were my first sponsor for the podcast. I really, really appreciate it. And you've been an awesome fan and an awesome supporter and a great mentor. So I want to thank you for that.
Oh, you're very welcome, Steve.
Yeah, it's been a blast. It's,
it has been.
Yeah.
Yeah, it has been a blast. I personally like it because we have, unlike a lot of athletes I work with, we actually have a forum to talk about our relationship and talk about some of the things that are important in a coaching and coach athlete relationship. And for me, I think there's a lot of power in that, because, you know, you just said it, a lot of people think a coach is somebody who prescribes, you know, when to ride, how to ride, you know, intervals, that kind of stuff. And really I focus on a lot of the other stuff, because the other stuff is where we can, you know, grow and make the biggest improvements. And, you know, I take the time to make sure that the athletes that I work with, you know, have that kind of growth mindset and will, you know, have a good experience with me and see value in what I'm offering, outside of the, you know, the nitty gritty of the, how much time to spend on the bike and that kind of stuff. So I appreciate you, being coachable and finding the, you know, the process that and journey that we go on, to be as valuable as it has been. So
Yeah. Thanks, man. It's been great. So how are you going to spend the rest of your day?
Yeah, pack rafting on the Bow River with my lovely wife.
Yeah.
I think we might even bring one of our dogs.
Yeah, I was going to ask if you can put your dogs in there without flatting.
Well, we've got one that's been a little bit depressed lately, so we're going to take him. He's got his own little life jacket and stuff, and tether him to me. So yeah, I'm going to go home and prep the boats and get all that ready. And I'm sure my wife has got my second coffee ready for me and probably packing up a lunch for us to hit the river. So, it was a pleasure catching up.
Yeah, man. Totally.
We'll make sure that the next one isn't so, so far away.
Yeah, for sure. And then, yeah, you know, winter's coming. So if you'll be out at Nipica again, so let me know when you're going to be there. Yeah. And like I said, I want to get out there. When's the snow start falling out there? Like early October? Oh. Or
you know what? Typically, it's like the last week of October that we see it in the valley here.
Yeah.
The kids either get to go trick or treating or not.
Right.
On snow depth. Yeah. But up in the mountains behind. Here up in Kananaskis country, up in the Spray Lakes and stuff, it's definitely mid-October that we start to see that. And we have some amazing locations for some good fat bike, riding when there's just skiffs of snow. And,
yeah.
You know, kind of fall/winter camping expeditions are always fun. So
yeah, regardless, I got to get out there anyway. I got to head to Rebound and I need a new shifter for my fat bike. So I need to get up there and see you and go for a ride and stuff. So we'll do that soon. Yeah. I think.
Yeah. Anytime, man, you just connect and we'll do it.
Right on. Okay, man. Well, thanks for your time today, Ryan. And, enjoy your paddle or your float.
Thanks, man.
Yeah. Definitely right on.
And you have a great day with the family.
Absolutely. We'll chat soon.
Okay. Chat soon.
Bye.
Bye.
I want to thank Ryan again for his time and thank all of you for tuning in. I hope you dug that conversation all about me and my habits and my health, I guess. I don't know if it gives you an insight into my life, but, you know, take it. I hope you get some value from it. I hope people do. And, take that into your own kind of life and realize, you know what I think I've realized the most. And I think I said it at the beginning of this podcast was I've been overtraining constantly. You don't need to push the limits every single day of the week to get fitness gains. And I think what's going to happen is you're going to sacrifice fitness by overtraining. And I think it's really important. I may not train a lot. I think I could step it up a little bit if I had more time and push my fitness a bit further, but you do what you can, right? You just get out there and be active. It's the best thing you can do, especially nowadays in the times we're in. We need to get out there, exercise, get the fresh air, and keep our immune systems healthy, eat well, and just, you know, I think if you live and sleep, get sleep. It's so important to our general mood and health, just sleep alone. If that's the one thing you could change about your life, that, you know, if you're thinking, oh, you know, I'd like to do something that will really make a difference, sleep, go to bed earlier,
get up a little bit later. And that's the time when we rebuild and restore is during sleep. So most important thing. So yeah, lots of interesting takeaways. I hope you dug it. I'm a little behind on the conversations. I'm going to try to get one out to you as soon as I can. Again, things have been kind of bananas. I'm sitting on a tote in my new bedroom. The TV's kind of on the floor in front of me. I got shit everywhere. Oh, the instability. It's just bananas. But we're getting through it. And I can't wait to bring you another conversation here on the My Back 40 podcast. And we'll see you next week. Keep the rubber side down.